Can you hear me? It's very important that you be able to hear me. I would like to begin, as the incomparable Dr. Rocco Errico always begins, by following the Eastern custom that before any talk is given, before any word is said on spirituality, that we say the Lord's Prayer in the Aramaic language, in the words in which it fell from the lips of Jesus 2,000 years ago. The picture that ancient Near Easterners had of Jesus is different from what we imagine in the modern world, because when we imagine Jesus, we think of those wonderful Italian Renaissance masterpieces. And so we see an Italian provincial, shoulder-length hair, long flowing robes. But to Near Easterners in the ancient world, he is a rabbi. His hair would be longer than mine, but it would not be shoulder length. It would be more or less neck length. He is rather tall. Jesus was a Galilean, and Galileans are rather tall. They imagine someone about 6 feet tall. He would have a much more generous beard than what we imagine, because that was the fashion for rabbis. He would be wearing a hat. Jesus would never be without his hat. It was a bit more than a skull cap. It was supposed halfway between a skull cap and a fez, like a raised skull cap. This custom of our brothers and sisters of the Jewish faith dates back to a time when you did not remove your hat to go in the presence of royalty, but you put your hat on. And so they started this custom as a reminder that we are always in the presence of royalty, because we are always in the presence of God. He has that swarthy Mediterranean look. And Jesus of Nazareth has eyes that burn right into you, because Near Easterners are not demure like we are in the modern world, having ancestors that lived in America, that came from Europe, where people were trying to be a little bit more sedate. When people in the Near East meet you, they look right into your eyes because they want to know if you're sincere. And when Jesus taught people, before he would speak, he would look into the eyes of the people who had come to learn from him, so he could sense what they needed to bring them back into balance. And how do you think he addressed 5,000 people? Built-in microphone systems? One group of people with a particular spiritual issue would come up, and he would look into their eyes and find something that they were doing right, find something that was liberating them in a certain area of their life, and he would raise it up so they would use it in other areas of their life. And then that group would leave, and another group would come up. And one of the groups that came up said to him, Rabbi, which is a very affectionate term in Aramaic, our teacher, our beloved teacher, teach us to pray. And he said, when you pray, pray in this manner. Awun dwashmeya nithkadasha shmach te'ite malkuta nechwe sovyannach e kenna dwashmeya apara'a haulen lachma disunkanan yao mana Wash woklan halbein e kenedachanan shwakanel hayavain. Ula ta'alan el nisyona Ella pasan min bisha. Metol de lachim alkuta, uhai la utishbokta, la alam olmin. Amen. It was a little different. Maybe one of these days our friends will invite us back, will invite me back, and maybe we can go over the Lord's Prayer a line at a time from the Aramaic. I actually teach a seminar which I call the 8 Spiritual Attunements, 8 Adjustments based on Dr. Errico's work. Splendid, splendid prayer. Because it sets your mind up to capture the guidance that you may need if you're facing a borderline decision. My name is Wyoming, like the state Wyoming without the O. I'm probably the only Irishman you'll ever meet with a Chinese name. My mother was an American, and her ancestors were Irish, and my father was full-blooded Chinese. He won a scholarship to come to America and get his master's degree, and of course they loved movies. I've seen thousands of old movies, so if you want to talk to me later, talk to me about movies. And when my mother was carrying me, my father read her a list of Chinese names that would fit with the names in the Chinese side of the family. And he asked her to choose one and spell it. And she chose this one because she could think of a way to spell it. It sounds like the state Wyoming, except you leave the O out. Wyoming is a quote from the Confucian Book of Poetry. Going back to the other side of my roots, before there was such a thing as a public opinion poll, the Emperor of China would send people out to collect folk songs. And that's how he found out what people's concerns were. And Wyoming was the refrain to one of those songs. And it means something like to carry all the people in your heart. They were urging the king, the emperor, the powers that be, to carry all the people in their heart. It's very patriotic. I'm very pleased with my name. It's a patriotic name. All my life, I have been a spiritual adventurer. And all of my life, I have been a healing hobbyist, collecting different methods of healing from different traditions, different disciplines. And all of my life, I've been lucky with teachers. I was incredibly lucky to learn the elements of Taoism and the Taoist health practices from my father and my uncle, starting when I was 7 years old. And Feng Shui is one of those healing disciplines. It's Feng Shui masters were the auxiliaries of physicians. Because if you're taking good medicine, but your blood is not circulating well, you will get well slowly. But if you're taking same doctor, same medicine, and the house is set up so nothing's pulling on the iron in your red blood cells and the blood circulates easily, you will get well quickly. So talk to me about that later also if you're interested. It's one of the healing rituals, one of the healing disciplines I studied. It was my great good fortune to study classical feng shui with the 4th ranking master of the Blue Dragon lineage from Taiwan as a healing discipline. It was my wonderful good fortune to study linguistics, the science of language, with 2 pupils of Noam Chomsky. I can't believe I was that lucky. And it was my incredible good fortune to study the Holy Scriptures with Dr. Rocco Errico, the most renowned Aramaic scholar in the English-speaking world, and so much more than a scholar, a prophet, really. The title of my talk today is The Triumphal Entry, which is kind of ironic, because when Jesus came into Jerusalem, he was trying to keep people from getting carried away. He was trying to keep people calm, keep his disciples with a state of balance. He expected a huge entry at the gate, and he didn't want this to arouse jealousy. So he sent someone to borrow a donkey and a foal, a little baby. This is very significant in the story of the entry, because what Jesus chose to ride on gives us a message about how to live our lives better, easier, healthier today. Now, some people thought that, he rode both of them. That wouldn't be possible. I've read commentaries. It's ridiculous. Because the mother of the donkey would be big and the little donkey would be a baby. He didn't choose to go into Jerusalem riding on a white horse. He wasn't like Napoleon. You know, Napoleon, who was a mixed bag like most leaders are, stopped the French Revolution. He stopped the bloodshed. He stopped all those beheadings. He was a brilliant military tactician. And whenever he was about to lead his armies into battle, he would ride a white horse up and down the columns and wave his hat so the spirits of his troops would be raised. I'm here and we're going to win. He rode a white horse like a king. And this has been going on for centuries. But when Jesus rode into Jerusalem, he didn't just ride on a donkey. He rode on the foal. He rode on the colt. Can you imagine what that must have looked like? The little colt stumbling under his weight. But they led the mother ahead because the little colt would have wanted to buck him off. But if they led the mother in front, the colt would follow its mother. How humiliating to ride on an animal that can't even support your weight. So what he was saying was, no matter what people say about me, forget this king business. I'm not here to lord it over anybody. And so he rode into Jerusalem with a great deal of freedom in his heart, because he was not responsible for the things that people said about him. He was only responsible for awakening the spiritual forces inside the hearts of the people he was teaching. He was beholden to no one. But when he came in the gate, people took off their outer garments. His disciples, and we'll say more about the disciples in a minute, and they laid them on the donkey that he was riding. They laid them in the streets. They took off palm branches from the trees so the animal he was riding on would not touch the dirt. And the little innocent children sang psalms that were only for the Messiah, only for God's anointed, who is supposed to deliver this country that was crushed under a foreign occupation, that was burdened down with the Romans, asking people to carry their freight from one town to another. And if you didn't do what they asked, they'd be kind of annoyed with you. How was this man supposed to fulfill the promises of that Messiah? He was not the kind of man they expected. They're expecting a king. They're expecting a general to raise the army of Israel and kill the Romans in the field. But what they got instead was a sage, a rabbi, a great one, a healer. In the ancient world, if you couldn't lay hands on people and pray, people would not take you seriously as a spiritual teacher. You had to be able to apply your hands and help people get over their illnesses. And it wasn't always fast. But that's another story. We'll talk about that at 2 o'clock. When he came in, these people were not going to stand for him to enter Jerusalem without a hero's welcome. Why? Well, they were his disciples, not just the 12 apostles, many, many, many disciples. And the overwhelming majority of his disciples were the grateful friends and relatives of people he had healed. In a Near East that was full of healers, that each had specialties, that each could pray for a certain thing and get results and pray for something else a long, long time and might be able to budge the sickness just a little bit. In a Near East that was full of healers with specialties, he was the only one without a specialty. He was a spiritual genius, just like Beethoven was a musical genius, just like Einstein was a scientific genius. And so these people were singing in gratitude, out of gratitude. You gave me back my husband. You gave me back my wife. You gave me back my child. You gave me back my best friend from leprosy, from epilepsy, from all these illnesses. It always amazes me that in the modern world, we find it difficult to imagine human beings able to heal one another. Most of you carry jumper cables in your trunk so that you can start your neighbor's battery when it's low. How come human beings can't do that with their nervous systems? But what Jesus did in his entry into Jerusalem was to humble himself. You know, Jerusalem is built on seven hills. The city of heavenly peace, the city of harmony, supposedly, is built on seven hills. So you always talk of people going up to Jerusalem. Even people in northern Israel will talk about going south, but going up to Jerusalem because they have to climb those hills. And what he is showing us is that if you want to go up to Jerusalem, if you want to go up to peace, if you want to go up into harmony, you have to go down in your images, your imagination about yourself. You have to let that go. You have to let your mind be clear and open. You have to ride in on a colt, which is what? It's a baby, which has no knowledge of personal experiences. No past, no reputation to live up to. Can just go in, see what's going on. He rode in with a great deal of freedom in his heart. No need to live up to other people's expectations. So that's the triumphal entry. It was a political failure. The priests in the temple thought, who is this upstart from northern Israel? He didn't study here. He didn't study in the Ivy League schools. He's a country rabbi. But he had helped so many people reclaim their health, reclaim their sanity, reclaim their lives, that the grateful loved ones of those people wouldn't let him come in without a hero's welcome. And he was trying to keep down trouble. So he humbled himself. If you want to go up to peace and harmony, you have to humble yourself. And they were saying, Hosanna. Shall I tell you what that means in the Aramaic language? Ushana. Ushana to the son of David. Of course, a son of David is a son of love. David had so much love in his heart, no matter how he messed up, he could always return to God. He could always return. But Ushana means, oh, mighty one. Oh, mighty one. Why was he mighty? He never raised an army. He never clashed with the Romans like a lot of the other people who claimed to be the Messiah did. And of course, they lost their battles and their followers met a violent end. This is history. If we don't remember history, we're doomed to repeat it. But what he did was he awakened the spiritual forces inside of his followers. He was mighty because there was no illness that he could not pray for and get results. He was mighty because his ability to heal was just like the waves of the ocean. If they don't wash the beach clean on this wave, it'll wash the beach clean on the next wave. And sometimes he had to make more than one attempt. So in praise of his healing ability, in praise of his returning their loved ones to them, they called him, O Mighty One, Ushana, Ushana to the Son of David, Ushana to the One of Great Compassion. And then, of course, he went to the garden, and the story goes on from there. This afternoon at 2, I will talk about the secret of faith. A lot of people say, oh, I could have such a wonderful healing in my life if only I had enough faith. Well, we're going to talk about that from the Aramaic text. And I will do a ritual that was passed down in Dr. Lamsa's church, the Holy Church of the East, which he taught to Dr. Errico, and Dr. Errico taught to his many, many students. And we'll see how much healing energy we can get flowing at St. Michael's Church on Amsterdam and 99th Street at 2 o'clock. God bless.
Thank you, Wai Ming. Thank you for those insights. On this Palm Sunday. Let's prepare to go deeper, to take this within, to take it to the secret place of the Most High. To go up, we must go down within to that deep place with gratitude. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful for all that I have. I am so blessed, I am so blessed, I am so grateful, I am so blessed for all that I am so blessed, I am so blessed, I am so grateful for all that I am. I am so blessed, I am so blessed, I am so grateful, I am so blessed for all that God is, I am so blessed, I am so blessed, I am so grateful for all that God is. I am so blessed, I am so blessed, I am so grateful, I am so blessed, I am so blessed. Just allow that truth to truly take hold. I am so blessed. See this truth as the roots beneath a great, big, solid oak tree. I am so blessed. Gratitude must be present for healing to take place. Do you want to be healed? That was the question the Rabbi Jesus asked. Do you want to be healed? In this upcoming week, known as Holy Week, what gift will you give yourself? This week is the journey to renewal, to Easter, to resurrecting, to rising up, to experience joy where there was sorrow. Will you visit this Jerusalem that we've talked so much about this week? The Jerusalem that is always in you, the dwelling place in consciousness of peace, of wholeness, of harmony, of love. While the language of Jesus was Aramaic, the language of Jesus is love. Love. Will you allow yourself to be loved, to be loving, to live in love on this day? Whatever it seems that we have been seeking in the outer, in truth, we already have everything, everything that we need. Love, joy, peace, harmony, prosperity. You are whatever it is you have been seeking. You are already whatever it is you have been seeking in the outer. And now we allow ourselves to drop even deeper into that secret place of the Most High. We go up to Jerusalem by going deeper down within in the silence.